Welcome to How to Make a Memory, the show that explores the items we make for one another and how they impact our relationships. My name is Jen Tierney, and this week I'm joined by the talented and charming Rebecca, who will be speaking with me about her career change to newborn baby photography. She makes babies smile, you guys. As you can probably tell, I have a cold at the moment, but you'll only have to put up with it during the intro and outro. My voice was just fine when Rebecca and I recorded. It was so fun to get a chance to catch up with Rebecca about her new business. I met her nearly 5 years ago, and at that time she was working as a media strategist and instructional designer. Watching her follow her dreams and seeing the outreach and support from her family has been so inspiring to me. Certainly helped motivate me when it came time to make this podcast a reality. I hope you enjoy listening in as we discuss babies, woodworking husbands, and the finicky art of newborn photography.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
When I first asked you about this, what were your thoughts about what you might want to talk about?
Photography was the first thing that came to mind because that's sort of my obsession these days. Because I think people, even the words that we use around photography, like take a picture, I think isn't as powerful as what it really is. You're creating images. And I think that people don't think of it that way. You're making art, you're making an image. And that includes pressing the button on the camera and a lot of other things. I love looking at Pinterest fail roundups that involve photography, especially because I'm newborn photography is my focus. So especially those, because, you know, you can tell they went into it with all the things they thought they needed. And just looking at it, you can't tell exactly, you know, how did it go so wrong? But there's all these little elements of, I mean, lighting is huge, of course, the posing and angles and backdrops and things they don't even know we have, like special bean bags to help the baby not sink too far, or, you know, composites where, you know, the photo you see is actually two different photos that we've put together. So you can't see the mom holding the baby up the whole time being safe.
Yes.
That's the most concerning one.
Yeah. The ones where it's like a baby that looks kind of like a frog angel.
Mm-hmm. The froggy pose.
The froggy pose. Yes. Like, that's so clearly not a position a newborn baby can be in.
Yes. And you'd be surprised at the number of people who attempt it. It's always the first thing that we say. So I'm in a lot of photography groups and we get a lot of new people coming in, and we always like just shout as loud as we can, please go to a training, take a course, be mentored, something, because, you know, this is when you're talking about newborn babies, safety is a huge issue there. And if you're just trying to copy what you saw on Pinterest, yikes.
Well, I'm glad that you are doing it the correct way. I mean, I would expect nothing less from you. You are a very, very conscientious human being. Why don't you talk a little bit about what drew you to photography and anything in your family, either your family that you have made with Quinn or your family from before that drew you towards that?
Yeah, I think my origin story as a photographer is completely unoriginal because I had a baby and I wanted to take pictures of my baby. we went out and bought the nice camera, a DSLR, when I was pregnant, and practiced a little on the kitties. When the baby was born, I got more into it and started photographing friends' babies, and then
like mine.
Yes, yours. Your cutie pie. I can't believe how big she is. And then I moved across the country, and it seemed like a good time for a fresh start. And I already had a business where I create photo books and slideshows for people who send me their photos. So this seemed like a natural extension. And I remember even when I started that business and tried to think of the name of it and, you know, taglines and everything, I, in the back of my mind, was keeping it open in case I ever wanted to expand to this. And it turns out I was right. I did.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, I really love the name of your business. And for, you know, anyone who is unfamiliar with you, why don't you tell them what it's called?
Sure. Life Remembered is the name of it. And my tagline is memories on your coffee table and not your hard drive. It really resonates with a lot of people when they hear it. They say, yes, that's where all of my photos are. And I say, I know. Let's fix that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For so many reasons. But yeah, in a lot of the groups, over the last week or so, some of our people who are in Houston, who are getting flooded out, they've been posting pictures of, you know, various things that have been ruined by the floods, and feeling so grateful that they have backups and that they have printed versions of things. And, you know, that one USB drive in their drawer getting destroyed doesn't mean that their memories are also destroyed.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I think about that a lot. Like I've said to Joe so many times, we need to get a water and fireproof safe and just put everything on one hard drive as like the extra, extra backup.
Yes.
And put it in there, you know, on top of having things in the cloud and on our external hard drive, you know, like have it in four places, please. Because, I mean, yes, there was a time before this time when people didn't have any pictures and they got along just fine. But you know what?
They have memories.
Yeah, we do not live in that time. I get to enjoy looking at pictures of my daughter at any given moment from any given moment. And
yes.
I would like to keep it that way.
Yes.
About a year or so ago, we got a ransomware virus.
Oh, no.
And all of everything got, in, you know, encrypted. And it was like the worst possible situation where, like, we hadn't backed up our photos for about 2 months. And so it was sort of like 2 months at the beginning of Emma's life where those pictures are just like – they're gone, you know? And, and what's crazy is we went on and, you know, it was like pay $200 and get everything back. And we were like, yes, take our money. Here you go. Yeah. Here's the money. And so we went to go pay, but they had already been caught by the CIA or whoever. So
okay.
We could not pay them, but the CIA or whoever else hadn't actually posted the de-encryption code for all of our files. So our stuff's just locked.
Oh my gosh.
There's no way to get it back.
I've never heard of that.
It was such a night. We were like, this is outrageous. How do we fix this? Oh, we can't. And there's just this like 2 month window of blankness from Emma's early life where we're like, well, I still have the pictures you took during that time.
Yeah, good. Yeah. What about iCloud? Don't you have a stream, right? Wouldn't it be there at least?
So yeah, there are certainly photos that did get saved. Like anything that we posted on our stream, our photo stream got saved. Anything that was on our cameras, on our phones got saved. But anything that had made it to the computer but hadn't been backed up quite yet. So it wasn't very much. Like it was maybe a third of what we had taken. But it was like stuff that I'm like, I don't even know what those pictures are of.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it wasn't worse. People I've heard about who've been hit with that, it's always been worse.
I mean, anytime I talk to a parent, I'm sure that it's going to come up as part of the conversation is sort of like the ultimate thing that you make as a person when you're a parent is your kids. And it's this constant effort of making them, you know, they're never done.
Yes.
You're never done. It's amazing. And so everything that I think for me, at least, and I'm sure this is probably the case for you, everything that I make now, I feel like is either for them or with them, or how is it going to impact them? Like I'm making this podcast and I want to share it with them, but also the time that I put into creating it, how does that take away from time I could be spending with them? You know, it's everything I make is about them. So in the end, I'm just making them.
Well, and it influences some of my decisions. I had this for a while on my website. I'm not sure if it's still there. So I make slideshows for people, often for receptions or birthday anniversary celebrations. And they often want to use their favorite song or a song that was, you know, important to them as a couple. And those songs are invariably not available for licensing in this format. A lot of people don't even realize that you can't just take a song off a CD or iTunes and use it in a slideshow like this. And so I had to think really long and hard about that and what I wanted my business to be. And one of the factors was trying to describe it to my daughter. How would I feel saying, yep, I do this and this and this. And also this thing that isn't actually legal and isn't really fair to the creators of the music, but I wanted to do it. So I did it anyways. It just doesn't work when you start describing it that way. So it, you know, even when she's not here, she's guiding things.
Yeah, that was one of the things when I was trying to come up with what I was going to do for a podcast. Like initially I was thinking about testing recipes and talking through recipes. And I mean, I thought about so many different, you know, things. And then I was like, this should really be something that I'm not worried about an audience. Like I really don't care how many people listen to it, just as long as I can share it with the kids. And so then it became like, okay, what do I want to share with them? And beyond what do I want to share with them, I needed to make sure it was something that I would be comfortable with them listening to. So I wanted to make sure that it was clean, and I wanted to make sure that the people who I was talking to were either people that I knew or they knew or that I wanted them to know, or, you know, things like that, and stories that would resonate with them. And that very much guided where my thinking went on it. It became this project that I'm doing for them more than anything else.
Yeah.
And so I'm always sort of thinking about them when I'm recording things, like, how are they going to feel about this when they listen back to it, you know, in like 20 years. And I have a fascination with my own mortality. And since before either of them were born, I was sort of like, I really should sit down and start recording what I would want to say to them if I wasn't around anymore.
Yeah.
And then this became sort of like, well, when I'm gone, they can listen to this. You know, they can sit down and have this to listen to and to think about, well, who is my mom and what was she interested in and who were her friends? And I think that it gives me comfort that way, because I'm like, well, I'm making something that will, you know, be past my own expiration date.
It's about legacies, and that's so universal, and it's something that comes up in my business. So I recently made the shift over to becoming a print artist. I offer digital files, but only alongside actual physical products, and that sets me apart. And it's not something that a lot of clients are prepared for these days. They're used to sort of getting their disc and running, but it's really important for me that the results of all this work that we're both putting into it last and are around and can be handed down and hung on the wall for years to come. And as part of that, I'm trying to sort of live my wisdom. And I've been ordering a lot of canvases lately and really thinking about the photos that I want to both to last as a legacy and to shape our daily lives. What do I want to see on that wall every day as I come downstairs for breakfast? And I found that absolutely every single canvas grouping that I've put up makes me smile when I look at it. And still, you know, this is months later, and I, oh yeah, I loved that day. Oh, look how little she was. And it was a year ago. It's an interesting interplay, and it's so important. And so as hard as it is to run a business that way, it's really important to me. And so it's something I'm doing from now on.
That's great. That's one of those things that I've never, ever done well in our house. Like, we've got the one really nice picture from our wedding, and
I love that picture.
It's such a great picture. I think it was like an accidental shot too. Like, it wasn't even something that, like, somebody else was taking our pictures, and then that person happened to be standing nearby and grabbed that shot. And it's such a stunning image, and
it's so memorable. Exactly, as soon as you said that, I was like, oh yeah,
I know. It's just such a great picture, and that's really the only picture in our house that's like on a nice canvas and in a really prominent spot, and everything else is sort of, you know, junky Michaels frames that hold five pictures. Yes. And I just like swap out the shots, and they're just printed off from CVS. It's really like, you know, oh, I care enough about this to hang them, but not much more than that. The one thing that I've been doing since, I don't know if, I think you've seen it, but right at the doorway, I have string hung. And on clothespins, I put pictures of the kids or of our family. And so there are about 30 pictures that hang right by the entrance to the house just on clothespins.
Nice.
And that's pretty, because I just swap those out every so often. And it's nice. And it kind of looks like, I don't know, farm chic. Something like that, you know, like
that's what I do for her artwork, actually, in the playroom. I have tiny clothespins and twine. We put her paintings up there.
Yes, exactly. So it's like the same exact setup. But I think the way you described it is really perfect. This idea of curating these images throughout your home that bring you joy every time you see them. I mean, we've been struggling with trying to make our home feel like our home. We've been here for 4 years, and I still feel like this home is not really, really mine, because we bought it and all the colors were fine and all of the flooring was fine. And, you know, so we were like, let's just keep it the way it is, you know. So it still doesn't feel like our house, and I just haven't put the time into making it. I think that's the way to do it. Invest in some good art.
I shouldn't admit that it takes me this long too, but there, some of these shoots were from, you know, these are Bella's baby pictures. That was 3 years ago, and I'm just now getting them up on the wall. And you know, I am a photographer. I know how important it is, and I don't even have all of my own pictures where I want them to be physically. So it's just sort of do what you can when you can. And it's not only just bringing me joy on the walls, but it's the message that I want to send to my kids. You know, you only put out things that you think are beautiful or worthy. And so when they see themselves on the wall and big and part of our lives, that's got to say something subconsciously to them that has to speak to the value that we place on them and our family. So that's part of it too for me when I'm trying to think of what to do and when to do it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Well, we haven't even found a photographer here yet. So we moved more than a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say 2 years now. But
It'll be 2 years in October. And I loved our photographer in Boston. I still miss her.
Are you talking about Justine?
Yes, I am. Justine Johnson of Justine Johnson Photography.
Yeah. We have a shoot with her this coming Thursday.
I'm like physically jealous right now in my stomach.
She's magical. She's just a magical woman.
Oh, there's no one like her, unfortunately. If she could just franchise herself out here, that would be great.
I know, right? Well, I mean, if you pay her enough, she'll come out there.
She was supposed to come last year, and then I went and had a baby and it got all.
Aww.
But since she refuses to clone herself so far, but I haven't found anyone else, and I really need to, because even just trying to find photos to put up on the walls now, my daughter's 9 months old, and there's very few I have of us as a family. Like, I take pictures of her all the time. So I felt bad because she's a second baby and she's not going to have as many pictures as the first baby. But I tell you what, her pictures are a lot better.
Yeah.
I've come a long way in my skills, but there's, you know, because I haven't put in the work to finding a new family photographer here, we don't have those. And this project of trying to get everything up on the walls is really throwing that into relief. So I finally started emailing photographers, people who aren't Justine. And she has a distinctive style. That's what I hope to achieve someday with my photography, that there's something about her work that just is there every time. And so I can be scrolling through Facebook really quickly and I'll pause because I can just tell that I'm going by some Justine photos. There's some quality she has. That's what I want to do.
If one day you like harnessed a style, which obviously has to sort of like come up naturally over time and sort of be born, what do you think you might want that to be like? How do you want people to describe that?
Yeah, it's something I think about a lot. Even in the other photographers and photography I choose to surround myself with, because it all shapes everything. I had experimented a little with more documentary photography, day in the life sort of stuff. And I found that some of the groups talked pretty disparagingly about posed and staged photography. And I found myself feeling a little defensive every time I read that. So that told me something. That at least illuminated how I do think there's value in the post photography. And so I quit some of those groups and I've gone a different direction. And the newborn photography that I've chosen to focus on is extremely post. It's a very, it's a niche product. There are specific poses and there are certain ways to do them well and ways where they don't look as good. And I'm still trying to learn all of that. I think I'll always be trying to learn all of that. But gosh, the style I'm going for, peaceful, colorful, smooth, sweet, I guess, sort of generic, I suppose, when you're talking about baby pictures, earth tones, something like that.
So I obviously see a very limited number of your work because you don't post everything that you do, you know, so I can't say that I've seen it all, but a lot of the stuff that you've posted of your daughters, I find that you use like, I mean, you've always used a lot of purple because that's like your like signature. I have a little girl in my life now, Emma's BFF Ruby. And she is a real big purple fan. So I feel like Rebecca has been sort of like her color scheme has been replaced in my life by Ruby. like there's all this purple and it's lovely. And her her use of purple is really like whimsical. She loves, because she's two, you know, so she,
right.
So it's all very like unicorns and kitties, and but they're all purple and it's great. A lot of the times when I see pictures that you've taken, I see a lot of really earthy browns with very light purples. And that's such a nice, soothing combination. When you're looking at pictures, especially of newborn babies, it's like, oh, yes, these babies are so serene.
Just that's like, awesome. That's absolutely the reaction that I'm going for. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, some baby pictures, I think, if they don't have that soft, calm quality, they can be a little bit, like, saccharine sweet.
Yeah.
And yeah. Which is nice, but I think when that happens, I feel like I'm just looking at a picture of any baby and not of this specific baby.
Well, a free tip for your listeners here, taking a picture of a sleeping baby and you want them to seem peaceful and serene, pro tip is to unfold their fingers. If they have a little baby fist, they're just going to look tense no matter what. So you always want to try to like unroll their fingers and get them flat, and it's going to make a huge difference in the photo. I didn't know until I first started studying. So there you go. Unroll the fingers.
There you go. It's, yeah, they little babies like to just like throw their fists up at the world. They're like, yes. Oh gosh, everything's so hard out here.
It's funny, I'm not in my office in the dark very much anymore. With all summer, it's been so light, and so just walking back into this room with my light on it and all my backdrops and my props and my example babies on the walls, it's all so peaceful. It's like, yes, I built this.
Oh, that is nice. It's sort of like walking into a theater when the actors and the audience aren't there. And it's like you've built all this stuff and potential. It's very calm and quiet. And yes, the potential. And like, I've done all this stuff. I've done all this work. And,
yeah,
you know, but looking at it behind the scenes.
I did have one other thing I thought was an interesting thing to think about. The way that technology and digital design can separate the different parts of the process of making. So I take the photos and I design photo books on my computer, but I don't actually make them physically. I send them to a printer and they do all of that work. And so it can be very divorced. The two parts of the process can be. Now, I've actually gone to visit my printer's US base, and so I got to see them in action and watch them actually creating on the floor, which was really cool and really cool to keep in the back of my head as I'm creating on my end. But when I say I make photo books, I always have to be clear that I'm not actually running a printing press in my home.
Yeah, of course. I think that it's one of the excellent things about technology, but also everybody has sort of had to become a little bit more specialized. And then they rely on other people as part of the process. Like it's sort of like a big long assembly line, and it's very rare to find a person who does all of the parts of the assembly line. Your husband's a good example of somebody who probably has several making tasks in his life that he sees from beginning to end.
Yeah.
And I think that when you go off on one of those endeavors, you really see why it is that we don't necessarily do everything that way. Because so about a year ago, I bought a fleece of wool, the full fleece of a sheep. And I was like, okay, I'm going to take this home and I'm going to clean it and I'm going to comb it and then I'm going to make it into roving and then I'm going to spin it into yarn and then I'm going to take the yarn and I'm going to make a blanket and I'm going to go from the sheep to a blanket and I'm going to do the whole thing myself. And oh my word, there is a reason why you go to a store and you buy yarn. And there's a reason why, you know, like somebody else dyes yarn and somebody different than that does, because doing all of those things yourself required you to have so many different skills that you can't do any of them really, really well.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, so people specialize. And I think that, you know, you've found the thing that you can specialize in and be expert at. And then there's somebody else who prints it and makes the book look perfect, right, and lovely, you know, and you'd make sure that the content of the books will be good. So is there anything that you do in your life that you would say you do from the very, very beginning to the very, very end?
Hmm. Well, even with this studio, so we spent my maternity leave putting this together, and one of the really neat parts of it is this custom shelving I have that's about half of one wall, and we designed it together to fit my items specifically. So I have a child-sized bench, and I have a little sofa, and my props and my boxes, and we laid them all out on the floor, and sort of he just put lines between them to represent the wood. And so I have literally could not be more customized. And it has a built-in changing table that you can flip down, and sort of the crown jewel is this the storage of all of my backdrops. So I have a lot of fabric that are used on top of the beanbag under the baby. And it's really hard to store them well, even in the most beautiful of studios. And I did a lot of research. They're folded up or rolled up and put on shelves. And I wanted to be able to see them and touch them and have that for my clients. So he designed this amazing, I don't even know what to call it, solution, I guess, where they're all on these pipes that are sticking out from the shelves, but they're all movable. They're individually movable so that I can get out what I want. And it looks like this, like half this helix. And I'll have to send you a picture to make any of that make sense. This literally exists nowhere in the world. He just made this up and it brought it to life. And I'm the only one that has it. And so that's pretty cool.
That's lovely.
Yeah, I want to put a couple of tutorials on my blog, sort of how we've solved some of the problems. But I feel like step one is always going to be marry a woodworker.
Yeah.
Oh, the nursery. I did that from sort of start to finish. I chose a Harry Potter theme for my daughter's nursery. That was an adventure and really satisfying to work on. And yeah,
it's very impressive. I will 100% post some links to your articles on creating it are very impressive and were extremely satisfying to read. I was like, yes, this is wonderful. Look at the potions.
Oh my God. Making the potion bottles was the best part. And I did it with my mom. That was,
that's great. That really your fun. Mom is another good maker.
Oh my gosh, yes. Talk about someone that I just keep putting my orders into. I'm like, can you do this? And also, can you make this? And she made, did you ever see Bella's Halloween costume last year?
I don't know if I did, maybe. Was it the year that she went as the little girl from Monsters, Inc.?
Yeah, exactly. She was Boo from Monsters, Inc. And I had this thought, and I thought, oh, that would be really cute. And Bella likes to wear pigtails. And so I pitched it to my mom, who'd never seen the movie and probably still hasn't. But I sent her a bunch of tutorials that other people had made and sort of said, can you do this? And she just handed me the most amazing result. It's just unbelievable. I'm so glad we live here now and that my daughters are going to grow up with that. So they're like, I can't sew, but I can expose them to someone who does.
Yeah.
And it's going to be fabulous.
When somebody asks me to make something for them, and I think that the people who, like your mom and your husband, probably feel this way, is like when somebody asks you to make something for them and you are able to execute on it and give it to them and they're really happy with the final product, it's just like the greatest feeling. Because sometimes you make things and the person you give it to either can't appreciate it because they're a baby or they don't realize what kind of time and effort or the cost or whatever to put something like that together. And I think that you're still proud of yourself and you're still glad that you did it and you still feel this sense of like, I did something nice for this person. But I think that when somebody receives something and they light up and they're just like, this is the great, and they just have that look on their face of being totally overwhelmed by the finished product. It adds this layer of pride in what you've made that I think is like the best form of pride a person can have. I did this and I did it well and it's appreciated. And I'm sure you're getting a real good taste of that with what you're now doing with the photography work.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking of when I give photo books to my mom, she's the best receiver of anything. She does the best impressed noises and she just stops everything and sits to look at each page, like every inch of it, and then turn the page and she just loves it and it makes it so fun to do for her.
I'm so glad that I was able to share Rebecca's story with you all. Her voice was made for podcasting and she was a pleasure to record with. And now I'd like to tell you about something I made this week. This past weekend, I worked with my daughter to make toddler-friendly lunches for the week. She helped me measure out all of the ingredients and make little round broccoli bites. We also made some chickpea bites that are very similar to falafel. Working on this together was a great afternoon activity for us, and as soon as these super healthy snacks came out of the oven, she couldn't wait to try them. There's nothing like getting a picky eater excited about cooking to help them try out new and healthy foods. That brings us to the end of this week's episode. A special thanks to Rebecca for joining me this week. Our logo design is by Becky Carpenter. We get system admin support from Greg Thole. Now, go make something for someone you love.